Bear Down Bears fans, welcome into the Chicago Bears podcast, ESPN Chicago,
like,
YouTube
click,
page.
Subscribe.
Yeah, don't forget to like.
Don't forget to like, click, subscribe.
Subscribe.
Do all the fun
comment, all that stuff.
And love the show.
Love us exclusively.
Give us a heart.
No hate. Yeah. Matter of fact, more hate.
Yes.
I'm cool. If you hate the show, just thumb up and then rip us in the comments.
And then thumb down.
Yeah. No. No thumb down. Oh. Thumb up. And then in the comments, tell us you hate us.
Okay. That's fine.
That's the better way to do things.
However you want to do it.
How are you today, Yerk?
I'm good.
Are you out of gas talking about the Chicago Bears coaching search?
A little bit, because nothing's really happening and it's all superfluous. Nothing of substance is really going on right now, because a lot of the coaches that you need to talk to in person aren't available in person. So all the Zoom crap to me is garbage. Zoom crap is garbage. I'm not impressed with it. But I am impressed with the Notre Dame Fighting Irish.
I am too.
And the resiliency and the way they came back yesterday. So good for Notre Dame. Good for the Fighting Irish. I'm very happy.
I'm glad you wore that hoodie, because that's the first thing I wanted to talk to you about.
Beautiful.
If I'm the Bears,
yes,
I understand that Marcus Freeman has signed an extension.
He has.
That will keep him in Notre Dame until 2030.
What, the extension was for how much?
It was 3 years. I don't know the figure off the top of my head.
$9 million, $12 million.
I imagine it's in the $10 million range.
$10 million a year. It's too much. The Bears don't want to pay that for him.
Locks him until 2030. But
the Bears don't want to pay that much for a head coach. I'm just being honest with you.
Well, then they're not getting anybody.
I think they're in the $6 million range.
Well, then who are they getting?
The coach from Iowa State.
Oh, my God.
That's my prediction for you. The coach from Iowa State. They're going
to
say, what a great offensive mind he is.
I was going to try to – offensive. He's a defensive end.
I have no idea who he is.
He's a defensive coach.
I don't know who he is. I have no idea. I'm just talking about the guy that's affordable.
Listen, if they hire Matt Campbell out of Iowa State and try to sell people, he's got a great offensive mind.
I don't know.
We're all in a whole heap of trouble.
He's affordable.
He's a defensive coach.
Unfortunately for me, I don't know Matt Campbell. I don't watch Iowa State football. I've not seen the Cyclones play in years. So I'm just telling you what the Bears are going to do. They're going to find somebody that's affordable in their area.
Anthony Weaver, Arthur Smith.
Anybody who's affordable. Somebody that's looking to become the head coach. It's the Bears.
Yerk, I'm trying to be positive. I'm trying to be glass half full.
I got you.
Maybe they're doing things a little differently.
Maybe
they get on the horn with Marcus Freeman and say, brother, I know you're making this at Notre Dame. We're going to pay you this.
It's going to take $15 million. $15 million a year for him to do that. Marcus Freeman's not going to leave. He just started building the program. Why would he come to the NFL?
Oh, man. Well, it's tough.
Here's a guy that just got the head job three, but he doesn't mind. He's young. He's youthful.
I know. I'm with you.
38, young and youthful is not a bad combination. The best thing that happened to him, he took over a job that Brian Kelly left, and nobody wanted to follow Brian Kelly.
Yeah. Oh,
right?
God.
Nobody left. Nobody followed Brian Kelly to LSU.
Brian Kelly's the biggest loser out of this whole thing. Do you remember his comments going to LSU and talking about it's hard to beat the SEC when you're at Notre Dame? Buddy, it's hard to beat the SEC when you're in the SEC.
Yeah.
And apparently Marcus Freeman can beat them just fine at Notre Dame.
He did a wonderful job. They beat Georgia. Nice job. Now they beat Penn State. Good job. You know, they played Penn State a lot in their history, the Fighting Irish
at
Notre Dame. Yeah. That used to be one of those things that they'd match up against Penn State for like a period of 3-4 years. Then they take off a little bit, and then they come back for 3-4 years again. So,
but that's how they are. I mean, they used to play Michigan State every year. I always looked forward
Michigan
to Notre
State,
Dame as
they
a
played
big rival.
Purdue.
Don't play anymore.
You know, my brother played against Frank Kmet, which is Cole Kmet's father, and Jeff Zganina, who is the father-in-law of Cole Kmet.
Well, there you go.
Did you know that? And then both of those guys were Chicago guys that went down to Purdue. Yeah, so they played Purdue. They play Michigan, and they play Michigan State almost every year. Yeah, that's the Fighting Irish did. Three Big Ten teams and the armed services. Every armed service that you could possibly find, Navy, Air Force, I think for sure. Then every Blue Moon Army would show up on the schedule for the Fighting Irish. USC every year, obviously.
Well, they played Army-Navy this year.
Yeah.
This was a more old-school schedule. They played Purdue. Mm-hmm. Look, my point
They don't shy away from me. They opened up with Texas A&M on the road. The Fighting Irish don't shy away from anybody.
Their schedule next year. We're not doing a Notre Dame podcast, but,
well, but we could
go down the rabbit hole.
Because we're talking about Marcus Freeman, we could do a Notre Dame podcast the whole day if you believe he's the best coach for the Chicago Bears moving forward. Young, exuberant, the hot commodity that's out there. You think he can go ahead and capture the room and can excite some people. If that's what you're trying to build, I'm not going to argue against you. I just want to know, are the Bears going to pay him? That's the problem. That's a major problem when you talk about the Chicago Bears. What are they willing to allocate to the head coach and the coaching staff? That's it. You want to attract people, you want to attract the best people, you got to pay people. And I don't think the Chicago Bears like to pay people. They'll pay the players because they have to. They don't necessarily have to pay the coaches. So that's what you got to get over. Maybe Kevin Warren, in his infinite wisdom as legal counsel, can convince the higher-ups that they need to pay coaches. And then Freeman's got a chance to become a coach here.
Yeah, I mean, the top guys, Vrabel.
I'm not against it.
Vrabel, it sounds like, is going to be a $10 million guy.
At least.
Ben Johnson's going to be a $10 million guy.
At least.
I would assume Liam Cohen's more in the 7-8
Joe Brady. Range. Joe Brady's my guy. I think Joe Brady's a guy that might go ahead and catch a check or two here.
But do you think he's a $6 million man? Because I could see Joe Brady. I could see him more in the 7-8 range. Well, $6 million feels like a light number, man.
Well, 4.5 for Eberflush. And, I mean, that's historically where the Bears operate. They operate in that zone.
But that was a coach who was going to get fired in Indianapolis and wasn't hot on the cycle. $4.5 million
wasn't hot on the cycle, and yet the Bears fell in love with him. I'm telling you, it's their MO, it's the modus operandi. That's the way they do business.
I'll ask you this: are you of the opinion then that they are going to go out and get more of a no name or lesser talked about type of guy?
Unfortunately, that's the way I feel until they prove me different, until they prove me wrong. I will think what I think about the Chicago Bears and their organization when it comes to head coaches and coaching staff until they do something different.
I also, I brought up Marcus Freeman, and I'm not going to sit here and say I think he's the best option for the Bears.
He's hot, though.
He's really good looking.
Not that kind of hot. I'm saying he's a hot commodity.
But
What's wrong with you, Shay?
Things are true.
They could.
Are they not?
Yes.
Dude, I went to a friend's house to watch the game last night because I didn't need my wife getting 3.5 hours of exposure to Marcus Freeman.
Well, you know what? Might have been a bonus for you afterwards.
I was thanking my lucky stars because he did that little wry smile thing. She would have gotten in the car and started driving
my philosophy Miami. Always was, I don't care where you get your appetite from as long as you eat at home.
All right, to round out the
thank God John Bon Jovi was out there. It's the only way I got laid. Shay, you're a professional.
I do think Ben Johnson is the best candidate for the job, but the reason I bring up Marcus Freeman is to make the point. I'm not one of these guys. It's like, it has to be offensive. There's no way around it. You have to get an offensive coach. I think you can do it differently. I prefer offense, but my number one need, I need a young guy.
All right. So we've broken it down on our show, the Carmen Yurko Show. I think Carm said he wants Ben Johnson. If not Ben Johnson, he went to Vrabel. He went to Brian Flores. And he went to the other hot defense coordinator that might be out there, Aaron Glenn. So after our one offensive coach, Ben Johnson, he went to three defensive coaches.
Right.
Okay. So obviously we're not against getting a defensive coach in as long as you bring in the right offensive coordinator. And I got no problem with that. This guy might be a head coaching candidate, didn't get a job here, doesn't like where he's at, might come here. He might be somebody that's been offensive coordinator, was in a bad situation. Bring him to Chicago Bears.
Right.
We'll find out.
My overarching theme is I need somebody younger, and all of those guys qualify. Like
you're
hiring a 60-year-old,
right?
100%. I'm an ageist. Yeah. In the NFL,
I'm 57.
Coaches, I'm an ageist.
Are you trying to get the old dowel and get me out of here? Is that what you're trying to do?
No.
Get the old thing. Not. You're trying to deliver me out the door, right down the chute, and the elevator that nobody gets to use.
It's less 57's fine.
Put me in a bin. Push me out.
57's the edge of it, but it's fine.
You don't want 73-year-old Peck.
I don't need 73-year-old Pete Carroll.
Yeah.
I don't need 61-year-old Mike McCarthy. I never needed
61? I'm 4 years away from 61.
What's 63?
That means 4 years ago, you're going to push me out the door.
What's Belichick, 63?
No, Belichick's in his 70s, too.
Yeah, I don't need that.
Yeah.
I don't need a guy that age. Yeah. Now, I want to bring this up with you, though, because I know in your career, you played for Coughlin. And Coughlin's one of the.
I played for Don Shula, Lindy Infante, Mike Holmgren, Tom Coughlin, Chris Palmer. Those are all my head coaches.
Right? Who was the best of that group? Obviously Shula, but
two of the guys that were the same were the best because they had a chance to spend more time with them. Holmgren and Coughlin. And Holmgren and Coughlin got the same results, and they did it different ways. Tom was more of a hard ass that lightened up as his time went on. He figured he needed to get a little bit more of the people person in him and massage a couple shoulders every once in a while. Mike had that from the get-go. Mike was very personable. But when Mike had to be an asshole, Mike had the absolute ability to go ahead and get shitty with people. And he did. And he got shitty with some players. When things didn't go right, he walked into a defensive meeting when we played the Dallas Cowboys and we had a double 88 Michael Irvin concept in. And he goes, "We're doubling them, right?" He goes, "We're doubling them. We watched the film." And he told Ray Rhodes, "Go ahead, go ahead." He goes, "How's he catching the ball if we double him? Why is he catching the ball?" So he was in the meeting calling guys out. And there was no gray area. And I was, thank God I was in the defensive back that day because he was getting after people.
So when you look at this field of coaches, yeah. And Coughlin's interesting because he went to the Giants. I think he was 58 when he took the job with the Giants.
Yeah.
And they ended up winning a Super Bowl.
Two.
So the age doesn't have to be all of it.
Two Super Bowls.
I just get a little nervous. That's not the rule. It's the exception. Same deal with Andy Reid, who picked up a Hall of Fame quarterback and was older when he took the Chiefs job. They've since won multiple Super Bowls.
Yeah, he was available. The Bears passed on him.
Typically, I think it's tough when you hire a guy that's at that age, if you don't surround him with really good talent, to actually get to the promised land and win a Super Bowl. But Tom Coughlin, Mike Holmgren, you played for, your favorite coaches that you played for.
Yeah, those were my two guys.
Who do you see in this crop that most resemble those guys?
Well, I mean, it's hard because, you know, the personalities, individuals' personalities are unique to what they do. And if you look at, he had 3 years of struggling with Brett Favre, 92, 93, and 94, struggling with Brett Favre until Brett finally kind of got it in 95. You know, he bounced back in 94 after they pulled him in the Minnesota game with a hip injury. Okay. And they put Brunell in the game in 94. And Brunell was just, it's his first action against the Minnesota Vikings in the Metrodome. With the speakers blaring and John Randall barking at you and Henry Thomas and Dolman, and not position A to be in. If you want to be a young quarterback coming into a game, that's not the way to do it. They had a come to Jesus meeting, Mike Holmgren and Brett Favre. They came together, they had a come to Jesus meeting. After that point, Favre starts to play a little bit better. We make the playoffs in 93, 94, and 95. In 95, we get to the NFC Championship game. Brett wins his first NFL MVP. He wins a second next year, and they win the Super Bowl. They win the third. So up until that point, they struggled with the quarterback position. And our offense wasn't good early. It was Sterling Sharp only through 94.
Sure.
In 95, when Sterling got hurt and couldn't play anymore, all of a sudden Robert Brooks came about, Antonio Freeman came about, Chewy and Keith Jackson came about, the Dorsey Levitt. Everything kind of opened up.
Sure.
Because you weren't relying upon one guy. So, you know, who's got that kind of patience? Do the Bears have that kind of patience to sit through three straight 9-7 seasons, then all of a sudden get to 11-5? 9-7 would be an absolute...
It'd be a dream.
Oh, my God. What were we going to do at 9-7? It'd be 9-8 now or 10-7, one of the two because of the extra game. But, I mean, you take that. You're struggling with your quarterback and everything, but you're still winning nine games. Now, our first year, we didn't go to the playoffs at 9-7. The next 2 years we did, and then we went 11-5, and then the rest is history. Brett Favre takes off, and he has a long storied career. Ron Wolf and Mike Holmgren can't get along. You believe that? You go to two Super Bowls, and you can't get along. And then he ends up going to Seattle and taking the head coaching job at Seattle. So who are these guys now? Ben Johnson and Joe Brady are two people I trust that I think can go ahead.
Why?
And do the job. Because I think they've got unique offensive minds and they've called plays. It's their offenses that they run. They don't run somebody else's offense.
Right.
They run their offense. So that's why I would trust them. It could be Liam Cohn, too. I could put him in just a little bit of a rung right underneath that. And then Mike Vrabel on the other side. I like Aaron Glenn. Aaron Glenn played the same time I played. He played 15 years in the league. You've got to have something going on to be able to play for an extended period of time. It's not just your athletic prowess, at some point you've got to understand the game to be able to play that long. So Aaron Glenn, the Flores stuff that people talk about, maybe he learned, like I said, Coughlin learned. Maybe Flores has learned that you can't quite be so dictator, you know, be a big dictator like that, that you've got to go ahead and accept information and allow people to think a little bit. So even Brian Flores at that point. So there's six guys that I've given you that I think would be fine as head coaches for the Chicago Bears. My worry, they go 0-6. They don't get one of them.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the fear. I think I have a fear with each of them. I think Ben Johnson, Joe Brady, Liam Cohen, it's the same fear for all three. And I would ask you what's more important, getting an offensive mind who seems to have a good head on their shoulders in terms of calling their offense and the play calling and developing a quarterback, or the ability to lead men, which we keep hearing about as the ultimate criteria.
I think when you win, your culture's fine. When you lose, your culture's crap.
100%.
It's that simple. This leader of men, let me tell you, guys want to be taught. Guys want to be, they want to learn from somebody. They want people to be strict. They want them to be on schedule. A player, like not much unlike a soldier, requires discipline. He wants that discipline to be able to function at a high level. So I don't think anybody, all you got to do is keep people accountable. And it's when you stop the accountability, it's when you let things slide that things become a problem.
And to me, isn't that the bare minimum? Like, you're hiring an NFL coach.
Yep.
You're not hiring for some like job at Deloitte. This isn't a salesperson. Right. You are hiring a professional football coach.
It's not just
you
that,
should assume they can lead.
It's not just the head coach, though. It's your coordinators,
yeah,
and it's your assistants. I dare not fall asleep in a meeting with Greg Blosch at the helm. You know, he was my defensive line coach in Green Bay. Dick Geron was our coordinator in Jacksonville. He was also the DB coach up in Green Bay. John Peace was my defensive line coach. You don't think about falling asleep on these guys. I go to Cleveland, and Clarence Brooks is doing the best he could with a ragtag group that we had, and we got a couple guys zonking out on us, you know? And you're like, kick the chair. You know, hey, what the fuck are you doing, man? You're in the NFL. You're up there against the fucking beam sleeping. It's no good. So, you know, the point is that players need to hold themselves accountable, and the coaches are the ultimate guys that have to go ahead, and they've got to, if they have to, they got to call people out on the carpet. Coughlin, we had two guys coming late, Tavian Banks and another kid. Tavian Banks was a running back out of Iowa, and they're coming late to the meeting. The hotel, we have to report at a certain time the day before the game.
Sure.
They flipped their car on the St. John Bridge.
Oh, Jesus.
Flipped the car. You know what Coughlin did? Fined him $10,000 apiece.
Yeah.
They flipped the car. They were in a car accident. He fined them. You know what he told them? If you guys weren't late, you wouldn't have been in a hurry, and you wouldn't have flipped your car if you weren't late. He goes, it was because you were late, you were in a hurry, and you made a dangerous little move, and your car flipped.
Yeah.
He goes, so lesson be learned. Be on time, and I want $10,000 from each of you.
That's holding someone accountable.
That's holding somebody accountable. Somebody had a few ladies up in the hotel, and you're not supposed to have lady guests.
I can imagine.
Both of those guys got fined. Now, they almost didn't play, but it was important time, and he fined them, told them they were going to be fined, how much they were going to be fined. He said, you can't do this blank. You've got to be focused. You tell people that you'll visit them in the lobby, and that's it. Nobody comes to the room. Security guard didn't stop it. He just noted it. That's all he did, reported it to the coach. They're not questioning the security guard. They're not grilling the security guard. The security guard saw what he saw, reported it. They fined both of the players. Two guys decided to go to the Canadian Ballet when we were in Buffalo. It's all Coughlin, right?
Yeah.
They go to the Canadian Ballet in Buffalo. And they're out there, you know, enjoying the little bit of time that they have. They come back late, right? Playoff game against Buffalo. He didn't suspend the guys, but the maximum amount of fine he could fine them for that, he did. And he said, gentlemen, he goes, your focus is not where it needs to be. You go do what you want to do, and you come back on time, you're focused. You go do what you want to do, and you don't come back on time, you're not focused. And because of that, I've got to take every dollar from you.
Jeez.
And he did. Now.
That's a way to teach, though.
He had a rule. No socks with sandals. Now, we're staying at the hotel, the Marriott, down in Jacksonville, right on the river. And it's right across the bridge, and then you go past Maxwell Coffee, and you go to the stadium it's cold in the hotel. So I put some socks because I want to, you know, wearing sandals, but I put some socks on. Nice international look.
European.
I come down, Tony Baselli looks at me and goes, dude, you're going to get fined. I go, what? For what? He goes, you can't wear white socks. Can't wear socks with your sandals. I said, but my feet are cold. He goes, he's going to find you, John. And we hit the ground, right? We hit the thing, the first floor. And I'm like, well, it's too late now. I can't take the socks off. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And Coughlin sees me on Tuesday. Confidential letter from the team. I open it up. $500 fine for wearing socks with sandals.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. So, you know what I did? I never wore socks with sandals again.
Yeah, it taught you accountability. And even if you don't like the rule, you learn the rule.
Exactly.
Okay, but you brought
up. The man's rule was the man's rule. And that's what he wanted, and that's the way it was going to be. And if you fought him, for what? Why? Why would you fight him? There's no reason to fight, except what the rule is, and move on.
But you brought up, he went to New York, and later in his career, learned to massage the shoulders.
Well, he learned to massage the shoulders the first year. We were 4-7. Okay. We won 5 in a row. We went to the playoffs. That's when he learned to take it easy a little bit. Lighten up, become more personable. We invited him to the donut, Krispy Kreme donut thing on Saturday mornings. So he'd come in with his coffee, he'd come in and have a donut and eat the shit with all the guys. And then that's when he started to figure out, all right, that you got to be able just to talk to people like they're human beings. We're not just machines. And when he learned that in Jacksonville.
Got it.
And took that from Jacksonville to New York.
Got it.
Yeah.
So all these accountability moments, the fines, all that toughness.
Yeah, we still got fined.
But did a lot of that you're telling me, these stories, did that come before he loosened up? Or was this after loosening up? No, a couple.
These were after because we were in the playoffs. Okay. These were still after. He was still there, man. He didn't care. We had two guys smoking a little wacky tabacky.
Oh, no.
At the local parking lot at the mall after they got out, right? This is 96, so there's no gray area. Everything was still against everything.
Right.
Their car gets confiscated. It's not their car. They're using somebody else's car on the team. And it gets confiscated because of the weed, right?
Sure.
It's an impound. It all stays quiet. Nobody knows a thing. Nothing ever happened, right? They get the car back to the original owner, whose car it was. Those two guys that were doing the little tobacco wacky stuff,
yeah.
Both of them fined. One guy ends up week two later. Still a bye-bye. He gets cut.
That's the life.
That's he made the choice. He decided to become a distraction. Because he became a distraction, they kept him around for a couple more weeks, and then they released him.
So Tom Thayer talks about he wants somebody in that building. When they're walking down the hall, you get a little scared. They might be coming to dap you up. They might be coming to tell you you're off the
team. Right, but the different things motivate different players. And if you're not doing anything wrong, why would you ever be scared?
Well, that's my thing, because you talk about it that way and they talk about the culture being broken and the locker room being broken. You can tell me if I'm wrong. I put it much more on the players than I do any of the coaches or the front office. I don't think these players were able to hold themselves accountable.
I think exactly. You're 100% correct. And I think Tom just wants somebody of substance. Like if MacArthur or Patton, the generals, walk by, they demand respect and attention. I think that's what you're looking for. Somebody that's going to demand a little respect and attention. I think that's what Tom wants. I think when you win, you get respect and attention.
And when you lose?
And when you lose, you don't.
You
get derided decisions. And there's derision.
Well, yeah, and that's like you make a dumb decision like not taking a timeout ahead of the Hail Mary, or however you want to think about the play before the Hail Mary. You make dumb decisions and the players don't believe in them. It's not that you aren't holding them accountable. It's how are they supposed to respect a person who they don't believe is smart or they don't believe will put them in the right position to succeed? You're obviously going to lose that respect. And then they let it linger. Like, I don't think that the locker room became toxic because he wasn't holding players accountable. I think the locker room became toxic because he was incapable of managing the end of a game.
They quit believing.
And being a winner.
Right. You've got to have faith in your coach, and they quit believing. And when you quit believing, you kind of turn your back on him, and that's it. If they could have a vote of no confidence in the locker room, I believe they would have taken a vote, whether they were confident or not confident, there would have been a no-confidence vote that Eberflus would have lost. They lost confidence in the coaches.
I'm going to use a phrase that I hate here, But what I'm getting from all of this, this conversation, there's more than one way to skin a cat.
Absolutely.
If Ben Johnson comes in.
I hate cats, so go ahead.
Yeah, well, yeah. If Ben Johnson comes in and it like has this brilliant offensive scheme and revitalizes Caleb Williams and turns him into a top seven-ish quarterback, and you've got an offense that's scoring 24, 25, 26 points a game, yeah, and you're winning games. Yeah. And I'm not even putting a lofty Lions Bills-esque number.
North right, you're not 30. Putting 30 on there.
I'm saying
right.
24, 25, 26 yeah. every Sunday. Yeah. And you're – it won't really matter, I don't think, if he's some hard ass that you're afraid will right. cut you at any given moment. Yeah. You will believe because you're winning. Same thing for Mike Vrabel. Just because he's going to come in and his fastball is, I'm a hard ass, and I'm going to throw that fastball, and I'm going to hold everybody accountable. Well – if he comes in and the defense looks the way that his Tennessee defense has looked four out of the six years he was there, and you aren't winning games, you're going to have problems on your hands because you can't lose and be a hard ass.
The greatest thing on his resume is he won with Ryan Tannehill.
Yep.
That's the greatest thing on his resume. And I was down there for a game, God, I forget what year, 2018, when Vrabel took over as coach against Houston Texans when they had DeAndre Hopkins on that team. And they found a way to come back at the end of the game, though it looked like they weren't going to. The Titans found a way to beat the Texans when we were down there. In Nashville for 3 days, and the fourth day we went to the game. That's kind of fun.
That is kind of fun. Yeah. I think it's just the whole thing for me, and I'm glad that you are on the same page. It's the culture will exist if you hire a quality coach. It's not like this, everybody gets lost in the Dan Campbell, he went in and built this, he's a motivator. But if they were losing, nobody would care how motivational or what he
told
said.
You how they were going to play. Dan Campbell did. He said, this is the 100%. Way I'm going to play. This is our style of play. And what do they do? That's exactly the way they play. It's like he said, we're going to play this way and this way. And what have they done? They've played that way and that way. And when he didn't see it in practice, he called them all up and he said, fellas, when we're going to have a physical practice, I need the physicality. He goes, we can't have 1,000 of these. He goes, but when we have it, we've got to bring it. He goes, and we didn't bring it today. And that's a problem. He goes, I'm upset. We didn't do what we're supposed to do today. He goes, we're going to have another one of these like Friday in the preseason. It was Friday. We're scheduled for another one. I need more. He goes, because we've got a limited amount, and this is the way you've got to practice to be able to play this way on Sunday. And I promise you, if we play this way on Sunday, we'll win on Sunday. If we play the way we did today, we're not going to win.
Yeah. And
that's it. That's not screaming at guys. That's just saying, we will get our ass kicked if you guys give this kind of effort. He goes, when we have this effort day, this full contact day, we need to bring the contact. Because we don't get a lot of these during the preseason. So.
And I think that's my fear with a guy like Vrabel. And I'm not saying Vrabel's a bad coach. But my fear is, you hear the stories out of Tennessee, he's an asshole. And it's all he is. He's always an asshole.
Players think coaches are assholes. I thought Blasch was an asshole at times.
But you can do that and
but
win.
He's still it's my just, coach.
If you're not winning, yeah. then you can't get away with being an asshole. Same way, if you're not winning, you're not going to get away with being a loose guy that lets people get away with stuff. But if you're winning, you can get away with either of those things. And then Flores, tell me if you agree here too, because I like Brian Flores. I kind of think he might be a one-trick pony though. These guys in this league that just blitz, they're like a pitcher that throws 102 miles an hour, and it's the only pitch that they throw.
Right, but Brian Flores on this team with this defensive backfield would this team would benefit by having pressure on the quarterback, because I think this very good defensive backfield with some pressure is an even better defensive backfield. You know what I'm saying?
So like, is he the only guy that can get it? Go ahead.
He's right for the defense.
Sure.
I don't know if he's right for the offense. It would depend upon who he hires as his offense coordinator to be able to find out whether he'll be good for the offense or not. What's Clingsbury doing this year?
Offensive coordinator.
Where?
Washington.
I don't know if there's a coordinator out there that's like a special assistant to somebody. You know, one of those guys that was fired, didn't get a job, and then somebody hired him to be a passing game coordinator, somebody that's in the recesses that only Brian Flores might know. But that's what I'm saying. I don't, because you hire a defensive coach, think, oh my God, we're in trouble because nobody's going to be there to, you know, get Caleb all right. I don't necessarily believe that. I think you could still find an offensive guy to come in here and coach.
Well, and that's what I think, like what you just brought up, the offensive coordinator side and how important that probably might be, as important, if not more important, than the head coach. And if you get one of these guys who is a play caller, like Brady or Ben Johnson, you kill two birds with one stone. And you know you can trust that side of the football. You're all good.
Yeah.
That is attractive to me. Where if you like have to hire an offensive coordinator and it's a first-time offensive coordinator, which is what the league's looking at, the Lions O-line coach is getting looked at as an offensive coordinator.
Hank Fraley. Right now.
I don't need...
Right? Remember Hank?
Hank Fraley, yeah. I don't need Hank Fraley to come in as a first-time OC for a defensive coach. I think that's where you might get yourself in trouble.
How do you like Mark Brunell?
Mark Brunell's fine.
He's a quarterback coach in Detroit.
How much does he get for golf?
He's been there since, I don't know. He's been there since Dan Campbell.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. That's your problem.
But isn't that
how far do you go down the tree like you did in Kansas City before you reach the Matt Nagy and you got what you got?
Right. Or
Eric Bieniemy never got a chance.
Or you hire Eberflus and you bring in the Packers quarterback coach Luke Getsy, who hadn't held this job and hadn't called plays, and it's a fucking disaster. Like, that's the part you got to watch out for.
Yeah.
So I think that's why I lean offense and I lean play caller, because I kill two birds with one stone. And I know I can trust one side of the football.
I'm not making an argument one way or the other on who they should get or who they shouldn't get.
Well, we're going to spin our wheels about it for a month.
Well, some are. But I think the biggest thing you got is, are they going to be willing to pay a guy? That's what I worry about.
God, I hope so.
So we'll see.
I hope so. I mean, if they're going to do things right, and it feels like they're doing things at least differently, you hear the reports, Courtney Cronin, I think, had it, that they are set on making themselves appear like a first-class organization. No more flying coaches in and coach, no more. But then they do all the virtual interviews, and you wonder how true could that be? Because you can talk to somebody like Pete Carroll in person. You can talk to a Mike Vrabel in person. Can you sell yourself as doing things first class if the people you can talk to, you're not flying them in to talk to?
Just because you call yourself world class doesn't make you world class. So just because every time you say something you call world class, world class, world class, world class, doesn't make you world class. It just means you know how to say the words. That's it. So we'll see. Time will tell.
We can call ourselves GQ models.
Exactly.
But we look like this.
Exactly. Look at this. What a group.
That is wonderful timing.
How do I get these under my eyes? How do these things disappear?
You got to sleep better, buddy.
What do you mean sleep better? I slept 8 hours last night.
You got to get you a better mattress.
I didn't wake up.
Get one of those sleep number mattresses.
I slept the whole night. I'm just asking. This little fleshy bags under my eye, how do I get rid of them? I think they're taken away from my baby blues.
Botox.
Look at those eyes, though.
Would you ever consider Botox, tighten yourself up?
I'm surprised if there's ladies watching that the divorce rate doesn't skyrocket. Yeah.
I'll tell you what.
Use me for motivation, girls. That's all.
Four sets of deep blue eyes looking right at you here. All right, really.
I got to go. I got a meeting.
I know you got to go. That'll do it. We had a good conversation.
You're never going to end this thing if I don't stop you.
I was just about to end it. Right. I was. Chicago Bears podcast. Rate, review,
don't
subscribe.
Don't forget, rate, review, subscribe.
Your thoughts in the comments.
Spin
our wheels about the head coach for next month. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
I'm already miserable.